Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vukcast episode number 96, which is also our third in-depth critique. We really need to get a proper name for them. But today I'm joined by Stephen.
Hi.
And Daniel.
Hello.
Previously known as Flame Condor. Yeah. So just in case you guys haven't been following, we've kind of been teasing about which game this would be previously. In case it wasn't obvious from the opening song, here is something to give it away. Resident Evil 0. So yeah, we'll be looking at Resident Evil 0, which is probably, I mean, it was the last Resident Evil game to have that classic formula before they completely rebooted it to the Resident Evil 4 formula. So and it was also probably the most, I would say it's the most divided one of all the classic games. So as always, we will start off with the introduction of the game and how it kind of developed, because this game had a very, very rocky past. Basically, back in 1997, a member of Capcom, Yoshiki Akamoto, highlighted that he had several titles in development for the Nintendo 64. Akamoto was particularly excited by the idea that the games for the 64 disk drive would have writable space, whereas, you know, CD-ROMs, they didn't. So yeah, they were kind of looking into the possibility of using that technology for a game.
A lot of people were for the DD. It's sort of funny how Nintendo positioning that sort of really upset everything, because if they hadn't announced the DD, a lot more people probably would have made stuff for the 64 instead of waiting for the DD and then for that swap.
Yeah. But the idea, so like, basically, for anyone who doesn't know, Resident Evil, the first game, I'm pretty sure it came out in 1996, but the idea of a prequel kind of began shortly after Nintendo announced the disc drive, so they were kind of working on it concurrently with the first Resident Evil game. Developers eventually chose the Nintendo 64 because they wanted to do, you know, what we have in the final game, where you have two characters, you can zap between them, you can drop items anywhere, and they thought that, you know, the cartridge system would suit that much better than a CD system, which is kind of ironic considering where it ended up. So basically, Capcom were working on Resident Evil 0, and they thought, well, while we're doing Resident Evil 2, which they did on the side, like a port to N64, yeah, they basically added in extra files that would kind of fill the gap and kind of get fans guessing about stuff that might have happened in Resident Evil 0.
Known as the X-Files.
Yeah. Well, EX-Files. I don't like saying X-Files because it sounds like, yeah.
Sounds so good.
So fast forward to the Tokyo Game Show in the year 2000, and Capcom show off the first official footage of the game. It's all based on the train section, which they call the Ecliptic Express, and it was the only part of the game that was ever properly finished for Nintendo 64. I read through some old previews and stuff of the game. A lot of people really highlighted that it looked like it was quite struggling to run on the 64. Considering how much of a technical marvel it was to get the Resident Evil 2 running on the 64, I would probably understand why. Even if you look at the trailers and stuff, like, the zombies themselves are exactly the same, like, lifted from Resident Evil 2, so I guess it was really cobbled together. And 6 months prior to the game's release date, Hideki Kamiya, who was working on the game as well, came out and said that the game was only roughly 10% complete. So essentially, the production was slowed on the game because they couldn't really fit anything else on one cartridge, and they didn't want to scale the game back any further because they thought it would be economically unviable. That is a quote direct. I don't really know what they mean by that. I think they're just saying that working on that game for so long and then cutting it back would maybe hurt them.
I think it probably would sales take more work to scale things back than it would be to, you know, than they would actually make from selling a game on the N64 at the end of its lifespan.
You look at what happened with Resident Evil 2. They didn't even really bother releasing that properly after all the work they'd done on it.
There's a fair chunk of that done, and that's actually being restored by another team right now. Okay, so then Capcom, it kind of went quiet for a bit. Capcom then officially announced that Resident Evil 0 was still in development, but it had shifted to Nintendo GameCube because that was just announced. At a media briefing in 2001, Capcom basically said, listen, the game is still around, but we can only show you the logo because of various circumstances. basically they got all the team back together to rewrite stuff, and it had been so long since they wrote the original stuff, which was, you know, back in the mid-90s, I guess, that the main scenario writer for the game had been asked to rewrite a section, but had completely forgotten what he had to write. So, I guess that's how long, I guess he'd moved on to other projects. In an interview with Shinji Mikami, who is more or less the father of the franchise, he clarified that Resident Evil Zero was a GameCube exclusive, and that it was not a port, and then that the original Resident Evil game would be a port and not a remake. No, would not be a port and would be a remake, but it would be releasing before Resident Evil Zero. So basically, I guess, they wanted to set everything up in the remake and then clarify the gaps, I guess, in Resident Evil Zero.
It's kind of weird, this is a little bit sort of, you know, we're into stuff we'll talk about later, but it's weird that the remake is usually now sort of the thing they put out just to get people excited for the new release. But it did so much better than Zero did, and you know, that would, you'd expect that to be the main event, but it kind of didn't end up being that way.
Well, I think it's a better game.
But I agree.
Zero or remake better?
Remake.
Yeah, I hear nothing but good stuff about it. Like, everyone sort of says remake's the ultimate version of Resident Evil 1.
Yeah, easily. Sure. Then in 2002, the trial version of Resident Evil Zero was released, called Biohazard Zero. And then in November, it was released in Japan and America. We got the game in February of 2003, and Europe got the game on the 7th of March 2003. I just wrote here quickly, it was really interesting to see that these two games came out the same year.
Only about 6 months apart.
Yeah, which I think is kind of bizarre. That would never happen today. But then again, Resident Evil Zero and Resident Evil 1 were both games that were pretty much, a lot of the work was done prior. And then when Resident Evil Zero came out, it did not sell that well. I mean, I think it sold well, but then, to give to people who don't know, Resident Evil Zero sold 1.25 million units, but the previous games all cleared at least 3 million. I mean, Resident Evil 2 got 6.7 million.
Even Remake?
Remake only got 1.3, Zero got 1.2.
I think it was just sort of Resident Evil 4 only sold 1.6 million on the GameCube. I think just the choice of platform between that and people being generally tired of the Resident Evil formula just really didn't work out well for them.
It's not just Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3, it's also Code Veronica, I think, came out before this, and
People felt like they'd played this formula over and over.
Oh yeah, and I mean, playing this for the first time, you can sort of see it's a very 32-bit era style game, and from what little I've played of the original, that doesn't seem to be that much.
I think we'll get into this later on, but this game did a lot of things, like it tried a lot of different things, and I mean, I don't think they were for the better, but we'll see. I guess we'll talk about it later. I would say that that's the reason why they kind of moved on and changed it all up for Resident Evil 4. But I mean, some people probably disagree with me. Some people still think these games are better than Resident Evil 4 and 5.
Yeah, let's not go there.
I mean, I still like the old games, but I like the new ones too. And the game was developed by Production Studio 3 of Capcom, who were like the ones. They didn't really handle the huge games. They were kind of like not a B team, but they're pretty close to it.
They're not the main team.
And obviously, because the game had so much trouble, they got in Flagship, who are now gone, I believe, and Tose. So it was kind of a lot of people had their hand in making it. Which brings us to, we'll start off with story. What did you guys think of the story?
After I finished it, I just realised how it was really terribly paced. It didn't even feel like I was leading up to something. The final boss just kind of happened, and it just seemed like it didn't have much substance to its story. It had some introduction, it had a whole bunch of exposition at the end, and in the middle was just kind of pure gameplay, which, you know, it's not terrible, but the actual storyline didn't seem to be really there.
Yeah, it's like when storyline did happen, it's just, oh, okay, there's this stuff happening. Neat.
Let's go back to get some items now.
I mean, it's not like, you know, from what I've seen the other ones, it's like they'll walk into a room and then they'll sort of discuss what's, you know, oh, there's a zombie there and all, oh, what happened. Whereas this one, it's like they walk and it sort of cuts out to like someone watching them via a video camera or just somewhere elsewhere discussing what's going on. The one time sort of something did happen that felt with the flow of the game was the bit when you meet, is it Enrico or whatever?
Yeah,
that's just, you're going down and then he's sort of there, oh, hi, bye.
That was, I think the like, we'll just to talk about balance first off, there's you're right, Steve, you're right, like, the game really, like, it throws you a little bit of story at the beginning, and then it kind of deals with the gaps that were brought up in Resident Evil, the first game. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, that Enrico scene, it makes sense to someone who's played the first game, who finds Enrico dead later on, or, like, struggling for his life later on at the new mansion or whatever. But to anyone who doesn't play, it just feels random.
Yeah.
And I think then, a lot of the story was like that, because there were lots of little, you know, you'd go into, it wasn't specifically told through cutscenes or anything, but you'd go into an area, it's like, wow, this is the lab from Resident Evil 2, or this, you know, looks like something from somewhere else, and you can start to begin to make your own story from that, which is kind of cool, but unless you were fairly up to date with what had happened in the series so far, it was a bit jarring for everyone else.
See, and a lot of that probably would have been lost to me, because I've never played any of the other ones other than, like, 4 and Revelations. So until you just said just then, I didn't even know that lab. I said, lab.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that really pissed me off as a fan. Those areas are like, you know, the major place where all the shit goes down in Resident Evil 2, and you don't even get to go into them. Like, you literally go to walk up to the door, and the game's like, there's no need to explore here now.
Oh, yes, and it doesn't even give you a reason. It's just like,
Which lab are we talking about? I don't sort of follow.
Where you see Enrico.
Oh, okay, so just after you meet the tyrant.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, actually, that was like only a few hours ago for me, and I'm like...
It was weird. It wasn't even like the door was locked or something. It just said, you don't need to go there.
Yeah, do you know why? It hurt even more, like, as a fan, because this game came out right after they confirmed that 2 and 3 would just be ports, they wouldn't be remakes. So I was very upset. I agree, the flow is completely off, like, nothing really happens for the middle of the game, and then, you know, at the end they kind of he gives you this big evil man monologue and then laughs and transforms, and that's it. To be fair, I think that kind of makes it feel a little bit more like, you know, you're Rebecca, you're there by yourself, like that.
And you're only really discovering what happens through
the
actual,
and that was the point of this game, was to uncover what happened. And I like that aspect. I think it's kind of Metroid-y almost, where, like, you're very isolated and you only come across people every now and then. But I do agree that maybe they could have done a better way of, you know, bringing the story more to the forefront. But then, if they did that too much of that, it might be too grating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
the story is very weird.
Doesn't need to be overly told to you. It's nice to leave things up to interpretation and allow players to think for themselves, but I just think it would have been a much more enjoyable story to someone who's completely up to date with, like, Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3, and they'd
be
able to make
sense
of things.
Which, I mean, and then, like, this was the first original Resident Evil 4 a Nintendo system, and I mean, they could have... you'd assume... I mean, they would have gotten a lot of people who hadn't played Resident Evil before with Remake, but you'd have to assume... I mean, this is a problem with sequels and prequels. If you get too wound up in your own lore, you sort of make it really hard for people who aren't familiar with the franchise to get invested or know what's going on.
Like Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, it's just like, why would you play one now if you haven't been playing one for the last few years? You've got to sort of go both ways, where you can make it approachable to people who have... who haven't played it, and the people who have played it before want to play it to see where it goes.
Yeah. I mean, now that's not a big problem, because you can buy pretty much every Resident Evil game on any, you know, digital service you can choose.
Except for 0.
But at that point, it wasn't. Yeah, exactly.
But you could buy Umbrella Chronicles.
Oh, yes.
It's not really, it's very abridged. What did you guys think of characters?
I like Rebecca, she seems alright.
I thought they seemed very flat, and there wasn't much to them. There was just gruff military man and rookie girl who can use a mixing box.
Rebecca's a bit of a dickhead. Like, I'll just say it now. I hated her in the first game, and she has a really big fan following amongst the people. Like, I mean, I don't know if just because she's female, but because people love her.
Because she's also got that very cute
girl
look, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Becky.
She's just an idiot. Like, I just like when she first meets Billy, "Don't call me little girl." It's like just so cringeworthy. Like, I just was not a fan of how she behaved. And, like, I liked Billy better. He was really cliche though. Like, I mean, I agree, but I like how they kept his past kind of
you know, shrouded in mystery,
nuanced and stuff, and they kind of tell you what happens, but I mean, it's kind of made ambiguous whether or not Billy actually did kill all those people or not.
And I do kind of think it was fairly cool that they, even if he did kill all those people, because he can help you now, you kind of put it off to the side and don't really think about it because he's being more helpful, and what he's done in the past may or may not really matter.
Yeah,
I would have liked if they had have explored that a bit more, because it's kind of an interesting take, and like they did a few bits here and there, like one like where you find him after he's been swept away, and then he sees skulls and all that, and has like a flashback to what happened.
And yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I mean, this is a little bit off topic, but
that's my job.
I was really disappointed that, you know, like in Resident Evil 5, where they go back to Africa, that Billy wasn't used in any capacity. Like, I mean, when Steven saw that cutscene, even when I saw that cutscene and remembered it and stuff, the artist, like the artistic design of like the village and everything, it looked exactly like it was lifted straight out of Resident Evil 5.
Really did.
It was bizarre that they didn't really revisit that at all. But I guess that's what happens when you change directors and stuff.
Has he not turned up in any other?
Nah, never. Like, he literally walks off into the sunset at the end of this game, and we've never heard from him again. Like, they haven't even talked about him in those files they release on the side or whatever. He's just been gone. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, has this game even been referenced at all in any other Resident Evil games? Because, I mean, it's like, do the leeches play any effect in 5 or 6, or is it just sort of this? Because, I mean, I get the impression, you know,
I mean, yeah, they talk, like, in the files and stuff of the future games, they talk about how the T-Virus was created by merging leech DNA with, you know, they talk about Marcus and stuff. Like, they talk about all of the stuff, I mean, but they don't talk about the characters.
Yeah,
but then, to be fair, like, the whole idea was that Billy would vanish. Like, if Rebecca made him vanish by saying he's dead, so why would anyone talk about him? But then it would still be nice if he showed up.
I just mean the story as a whole. Like, because, I mean, the point of a prequel is to sort of, this is giving you more information about how we got to the events of the first game. Whereas, does anything other than Rebecca turning up in the mansion, does any of what happens in this game really have an effect at all with stuff in the series?
Really. All the rest of this, like Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3 were made well in advance of this, so
yeah,
unless they'd planned a lot of it already, and
as I said,
what happened to the other team.
At the beginning, like they were planning a prequel from the very start. They wanted to do something like that. And you know, it's kind of obvious they did when you first play the first game, because, you know, you've got all these people from the Alpha team who are, like, you know, the regulars, like Jill, Barry, Chris and stuff, but then you've got people from Bravo team, but the only person is Rebecca. I think there's a few others, obviously, later on, but Rebecca's the main one. So that kind of raised the question, what was Rebecca doing? Biggest thing that sticks out is Rebecca acts so dumb in Resident Evil 1. Like, she is shocked to see the zombies. She's, like, I mean, this might just be them not, you know, 100% knowing if they were going to make the sequel prequel or not. But if Rebecca's just been all through this, she's literally taken down that giant leech queen thing. Why is she shocked to see zombies and in a house nearby that she's escaped to? You know what I mean? Like, that seems dumb.
Was that even in Remake, where they had her acting like that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like you'd think they would have thought, maybe we should just change this a bit, you know what we're working on.
But it's interesting because they changed stuff, like, for example, we'll get into it later, but they changed stuff in the original game. Like, in the first game, I don't know if you guys remember the scene or hearing about the scene where they lift a handgun up and there's an arm attached to it that's been ripped off. They took that scene out of Remake because in Zero it doesn't happen. So they fixed stuff like that. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like, they kind of, the continuity wasn't that good for Rebecca as a person. People argue that she went through like post-traumatic stress and she forgot everything, but
she is Samus.
Yeah,
like a baby. It just seems funny that I don't know if maybe Capcom's ashamed of this game, because other than Zero and the remake on the Wii, they don't reference it at all. They just sort of ignore it, whereas they're happy to go back to referencing all the other ones, but
I mean, yeah, it's in Chronicles.
Yeah, but you couldn't
leave it out.
The leech DNA. I guess they only reference as much as they really need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just quickly, before we move on from story, the villain.
But,
I mean, I
Wesker, right? It's Wesker, because he seemed like the most crucial one.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Wesker and the Birkin scene, like, Birkin, if you don't, you got, anyone doesn't know, the guy who Wesker's talking to a lot, they're, like, best friends, they grew up together, and went, well, they didn't grow up together, but they went to uni together or something.
Coach BFFs.
They, like, the worst bromance in history. A bad bromance. they were really good friends, and there was always this third person, James Marcus, who is the villain in this game, and you kind of knew there was bad blood between James Marcus and Birkin and Wesker, like, but you never really knew what happened, and this game kind of tells you. But to me, it was really dumb. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but I didn't really find it, like real. I mean, not, I'm not going to say realistic, because these games aren't realistic, but I don't buy it that these leeches would grow an attachment to a human being that way, and
maybe because he designed them and they acknowledged that.
I'm not going to spoil the other games because I know you, some of you guys, I know Steve wants to play the other games, but they never really, like, they had some ridiculous kind of out there plot twists, but they never really dipped into this, like, you know, animals merging with people, and just seemed bizarre to me. And then, like, you have this guy who is younger version of Marcus, who looks like an opera singing Sephiroth Jesus figure. And, like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, this game, like, this series has dropped off. What are they doing? Like, they've run out of ideas, whatever. It just seemed so unplausible to me. But then I say that, and then in, you know, the next game, which is Resident Evil 4, we've got a midget Castellan
an amusement monk.
Yeah, like, I
he
don't...
wasn't even the main villain in 4 at the end, was it? It was, what's his name?
Oh, it was Sadler, or whatever his name was, the guy
Osmund who was... Sadler.
Yeah, it was just a bit of a... I mean, I don't like the story of 4. I always say that. I think that 5 is a better Resident Evil game, but people hate me for saying that.
Oh, God.
But, yeah.
Send off in the comments.
I don't know. I just think the story in this was really half-baked, and they kind of just... It's almost like they designed the references to the first game first and then filled shit in around it. And then even then, they didn't fill in that much stuff around it, you know what I mean?
And they didn't really put in enough references to the first. It's just... I don't know. I just think it would have been a good opportunity to give a lot more info that carries on. I mean,
there's the scene where Wesker talks to Birkin and says, you know, I'm going to go back to the training facility, to the other mansion, to train, to get data for the tyrant or whatever, which is a reference to what he's, when he goes to the first game.
That was kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, like, that kind of stuff is, I mean, you wouldn't have picked that up, Dan, but, like, yeah, it just, that kind of stuff is, like, a really good, like, way to tie it in. But then, you know, as you were saying before, if you have no idea what he's talking about, you're like, oh, okay. Cool.
I guess that's, I mean, why the story more so just sort of went over me, because I've played 4 and Revelations, both of which I'm sure have nothing to do with this at all. Like,
very, very little, yeah.
Revelations has nothing.
Neither would 4. 4 was in a completely different country with... But, like, 4 seems to be the most detached from any Resident Evil before it, other than the fact that it's got Leon in it.
Yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think the story was quite average. I mean, I know Resident Evil games, like, the story, you kind of shouldn't really take them too seriously, but this one just felt a little bit too over the top, in summary, I guess.
And zombie monkeys.
We will move on to game design. We'll start off with, you know, just an overview of the game and the puzzles. So, I think the most obvious thing is this game, it's very obvious that this game was designed and kind of semi-produced before the last, what, 3 games that came out in the series. The most obvious thing is, I mean, I don't know if you guys know, but in newer games, if you get grabbed by a zombie and you mash hard enough, you will, like,
get away with that having been
without damaged. Yeah, and that's not in this game. There's no defense weapons like in Remake. For people who don't know, defense weapons are where if you're holding it, like if you've got one in your inventory and a zombie grabs you, you can stab them in the side of the head, or you can throw a grenade in their mouth,
or use a taser.
Yeah, and they just run. They, you know, obviously they fall off you, which is a really cool way to kind of, you know, add to the combat system. And on top of that, there's no more Crimson Head zombies, which are kind of the standout from Remake, because, you know, you would kill a zombie and you, it would lay there and then it would eventually rise back up again if you don't burn the corpse. And that kind of added this kind of tense feeling to the game, and that was completely taken out of Zero as well. Those little things, I guess, are just a kind of, I feel like a kind of a sign of how antiquated it is. Like, it was.
Yeah, it sort of speaks to how long it had been in development and just, you know, how many people's ideas went into it, but it was still kind of stuck in. It felt like a really pretty early Resident Evil game, like, whereas Remake actually felt like it had been, you know, a lot of the stuff had been thought out properly, but Zero kind of just still felt like a PS1 Resident Evil game, but on a GameCube. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was a fun, you know, the industry was sort of, it was making that cross from 32-bit to the, that era of games, and, well, as I said, this game plays like a PS1 Resident Evil, but especially by 2002, I think it should have evolved a bit more, because, I mean, this would have been contemporary with Eternal Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, and I mean, Eternal Darkness had the puzzles, but it just felt like a lot more of a fluid game, whereas this just didn't. It had a lot of that sort of just little things here and there that would slow the game down that were sort of a relic from the previous generation.
We'll talk about puzzles quickly, and then we'll talk about controls before we move on. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I think the puzzles in this game were pretty weak. There were some moments where it really shined. Like, I loved the puzzle with the animals and the torch. The torches. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, I do remember it. I didn't love it, but
oh,
I do remember
whole,
it.
The whole one cool time you use Billy's lighter.
Yeah, we'll get to that too. But yeah, I don't know, it was just a cool... I love puzzles in these games. Like, I mean, they make no sense. Like, why would someone set up a house this way? Like, they kind of
try... Because they have an eccentric mind.
Yeah, like, that was the way they kind of explained it away in the story of the first game.
That's the weird thing with Resident Evil. On one hand, it wants to be ultra-realistic and you know, like, we'll get to it later, but with the limiting your inventory space and stuff like that. And then it has very video gamey. Oh, we got to have a puzzle for you to unlock.
Yeah, but then some of the puzzles in this game, they kind of feel like they would happen. Like, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember the one in the basement with the electricity
yeah.
breaker. Like, I feel like that would kind of maybe be a thing. I mean, I'm not an engineer or
the
someone
one
who
where
works
you have
with that equipment.
To, in the classroom, unlock
the push the buttons. Yeah, I did find the one that stands out to me that kind of makes a bit of sense is, there's one where you send one character into, like, a little water dam thing and push around some boxes and then fill it up. That kind of seems like it wouldn't be too far out of realistic
ideas. And interestingly enough, that one was pretty much lifted straight from Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 1. So it's, like, exactly the same.
Or the one where you're trying to get the power on in the treatment facility or whatever it's called, and you gotta, you can only activate,
yeah, that's
like
the one Jacob... Well, no, that's the one James was trying to allude to before. With, like, the power breakers.
That was... Oh, sorry.
No, I was talking about the one with the monkeys in the basement.
Monkeys!
Oh, right.
Where you
so
kind
many
of have
power-related
the...
puzzles.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's... It's the easiest way, I guess, for them to do something. But, yeah, I mean, I like... I don't know. I just feel like they were kind of... most of the puzzles were kind of lazy in this. And, I mean, I think that... I kind of... And I've... My opinions of all these games have changed ever since I... Because I played Resident Evil and I loved them way before I played Silent Hill. And Silent Hill puzzles, to me, are much better because they're so freaking weird and abstract.
Mm.
And, like, it works
and they can
in that
be.
Setting because it's just such a fucked up place.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, they kind of have to be a little bit more grounded in realism. But, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really like the puzzles that much in this, besides the ones I mentioned. We will talk about the co-op puzzles later. But quickly, did any of you guys get a chance to play Leech Hunter? I know, which
I played
for
a little
anyone
bit
who
of
doesn't,
it.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, Leech Hunter was the mode that you unlock.
I finished the game 5 minutes before we started. I have
yes,
not
very well prepared. yeah, no, it's pretty cool. Like, I really hated how you kind of had to just run through the mansion twice with two different characters because each character can only pick up certain leeches.
Sounds like amazing back in the day where they had, you know, you could only get two keys before you had to tag the other person.
I mean, I think it's a reasonably cool idea, just like, you know, it's a way to go back through the mansion and get familiar with it, maybe in preparation for another run through the regular game, possibly, and, you know, it gave you mountains of ammo, so you could just sort of work your way through it, shoot everything that moves, and unlock some things,
I
guess.
Was it almost a precursor to, like, the Mercenaries mode?
Mercenaries mode was in Resident Evil 3.
Okay.
Actually, no, but it wasn't. Like, this is what I said this in my notes, but every single Resident Evil game to date has had this kind of, these modes that you unlock afterwards. Like, Resident Evil 2 had battle mode, where you can play as any character you want, and they each have their own, you know, specific weapon loadout, and you run through a few rooms, and, you know, you get to the end, you win a prize, which might be, like, a rocket launcher in the main game. The Mercenaries was first shown in Resident Evil 3, and that was the same thing, where you got points based on how many enemies you killed as you ran through the areas, and if you saved hostages as well, because they were in that game too. But then I guess they retooled it for Resident Evil 4, which was the Mercenaries, which is like the arena battle kind of setup that they have now, which I think is much better anyway. But yeah, the only thing I didn't like about Resident Evil 0 was I kind of feel like they should have done something, because they do it with some of the older games, where you can kind of go back through as a character who was kind of in the game, but at a different place. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, in Resident Evil 2, if you finish that, you can play as Hunk, who's the guy who runs in, who goes in to get the G-Virus sample. Like, you play through what he does.
Or, like, in 2 as well, how you'd finish the game with one character and then play through it with the other character, interacting with the character that you played in the first place.
Yeah,
in some
and
key
I mean,
sections.
They could have done a thing where you could play as Enrico, for example, and you'd see what he was doing while Rebecca was, you know,
fumbling around.
Yeah, and then, you know, it could end with him entering the mansion for Resident Evil 1. It would still kind of show you what happened, and it would provide some cool thing to do afterwards. And, like, in those games especially, they kind of always do a thing where, you know, for example, if they did it for Enrico, maybe he would be the one who takes the weights off the that weight thing, that scale thing in the foyer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of do stuff like that. Like,
and they kind of explain why they were just lying around in seemingly random rooms.
Value. Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's just more of a fan.
Seems like Leech Hunter was more of an afterthought.
And it's more of an arcade-y kind of setup, I guess, than... We'll close out the general overview of the game design with a discussion on the controls, which I guess are the most polarizing aspect of these games. Would you guys... I'd say
they're very polarizing.
A lot of people hate them. I know Daniel does. I don't care. I don't mind them, but...
I can see there's parts where it makes things a little bit, you know, where... For certain bosses, I was having to either do a quick 180, which took a while, or do a more, you know, smaller turn, and it still was not quite as nice. But the game's designed heavily around it, and after about 5 to 10 minutes, it just stopped being an issue for most cases for me.
I know the quick 180 is a new thing that came in a 0, and I'm glad for that, because it makes...
No, it's been in there since 2, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's been in there. Hasn't it been in there since the first one?
I don't think it was in the very first one. It might have been introduced in Director's Cut. Well,
maybe they did
know.
It in, like, DualShock Edition. Remember they did that too?
Yeah.
That was the biggest milking, but yeah.
I like that. That made things a bit more fluid. But I don't know, I never had a PlayStation, so I missed out on a lot of the 3D games trying to do 3D control with a D-pad. So I'm used to being able to use an analog stick, and I just don't find tank controls work with an analog stick. I mean, I was playing the Wii version, and I ended up using the D-pad, moving around most of the time, because that felt a lot more natural with those tank controls. But even then, it just was too sluggish. It just...
To be fair, I remember I started off on the Wii remote, and then I eventually just moved to the game to the GameCube pad, and it was very weird to use the stick for the controls.
I used the stick for the whole time through on the GameCube pad. Yeah, it just...
It
I know,
was
just
no,
a more natural
because,
hand position
Because I don't
me.
Know if you remember, but I played, like, up until halfway through the match and then died, and I forgot to save, so I had to start fresh. So I'd spent a lot of time on the Wii remote, and it was fine. But, yeah, then it was just weird. But then I got used to it, as you said, but I guess they're just not for some people.
I feel like part of the reason why it might not have been a big issue for me is, like, my very first 3D game was Croc, and that had essentially tank controls in a Mario-style, you know, big open world, and... I still go back and play that and have no issue with it, which might be why Resident Evil doesn't faze me.
But it might, I mean, I think, and you mentioned this before as well, you know, Resident Evil 4 had the same scheme, but
it's just a different camera angle.
So maybe it's the cameras that piss people
and,
off.
I mean, pretty much all third-person shooters do use tank controls, but it's because you're behind the character, it just feels natural to be moving forward. Whereas, and I mean, like, you said it well, Stephen, like what in the chat we're having about it. It makes sense, because if the camera is moving around, you don't want to have to be pushing in the direction that you're going in, because a lot of games that do that, that's also confusing, because then you're like, oh, I have to go now.
You're suddenly in a different camera angle.
Yeah,
and
then
either,
you start going back to the screen you're on before. That's annoying as hell. But, I mean, it's just, for me, I mean, with especially 3D games, it's, I mean, I was N64, so I was used to, like, Zelda and Mario, and where that's how you control it. It just feels a lot more fluid, whereas this didn't. And I guess, I mean, I shouldn't think of it as, like, a 3D game. It's more sort of like an old-school 2D sort of adventure exploring game, just with weird camera angles.
I do think that those fixed camera angles were, I mean, they're not exactly the tank controls, but I think that was the only time when I found the controls frustrating, is when I, you know, maybe there was a boss around the corner and I didn't know.
Yeah.
The only way to find out was to go into the next screen. It's like, suddenly, oh no, it's right there, and then you got to do a 180
quick
turn,
run around, try
it.
Yeah.
It was less about the controls and just more about the limitations.
And then, like, you can't see it coming up on you, so you don't know, am I shooting it? Am I doing anything? And then it's like, right on you. I mean, look, look, fixed camera perspective, I mean, I know that's how they got the game looking as good as they did. And it's something a lot from the 32-bit era, but I don't know. I mean, I think for me that was the main stumbling point. There's just too many camera issues, and
it's kind of. But then, to me, I don't know. With the camera, to me, that's the way that they really add the tension to it. Like,
oh,
you know, you
no
walk
doubt.
Into a room and you hear, like, say, the grasshoppers clicking, or you know, those big ass grasshoppers, or you hear, like, the hunter, the footsteps of the hunter. Like, that's really, really tense.
But
then
it's
I
fake,
agree
it's
with
fake
you.
Because, I mean, your character could be looking right at the thing. You can't see it, and it just feels stupid that you move from, oh, it was right in front of me. My character is like
that. I would agree with you, but then I feel like most games, the characters never react as they would
yeah,
in, say,
know,
the cutscene. But, yeah.
Rest in peace,
guess,
Alex Rovis.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess the control system is always going to be something that will divide people. I do know that, like, Konami, I like how Konami kind of took that on board and with Silent Hill, which started off with, oh no, it wasn't though, no. But then they kind of took, they had Resident Evil controls in that, and I think from Silent Hill 2 onwards, they had a 3D mode, which was
Silent
more or
Hill
less,
2 had it, yeah.
Yeah, which was more or less, you know, normal controls, so that was good. But yeah, I don't know, I don't mind it. I feel like it's a fun way to kind of relive that era. I mean, I don't know how to explain it besides that. Like, I feel like I'm back to the old, when I was a kid, you know what I mean, and playing. It's just an interesting thing to see how far we've come, I guess, to in games with
control
schemes and stuff.
It's a very dated control scheme, and I don't know. It's at times, I didn't mind it, and if you're just sort of wandering around, yeah, it's right, but I just, especially with the amount of backtracking you have to do to get items you've left behind or whatever, it just made, just felt like it artificially slowed things, and then add to that the loading screens each time you're going from one environment to another. It just sort of all added to make it feel really, really dated. And I mean, I can sort of understand why the Wii version got. I mean, the Wii version is just as good a game as the GameCube one, but it got a lot worse reviews, and I think that's just because of how far the medium had sort of gone in those 4 or 5 years between the releases.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand what you mean, but yeah, I don't know. I guess because I'm a fan, I look past it because I can play it without the problem, but yeah. Okay, so we will go to a really, really quick break, and we will return to continue talking about the game design. So, yeah. And we're back, so we're still talking about game design for Resident Evil Zero. We'll get straight into battle mechanics and enemy design. I have no problems admitting that the battle system is very old, very archaic. I like the way, you know, like when you hold the aim button, you know, your character kind of zooms to an enemy, but then there's also problems where your character might not prioritize correctly and will go for, you know, a zombie
one
in the
off-screen
distance, rather than a hunter that's, like, at your neck, literally.
Yeah, I mainly found there were certain rooms where there were enemies off screen and on screen, and you want to shoot at the one that's on the screen, but it, you know, happens to be further away in the 3D space than the one that's off screen, and it's like, no, I don't want to look at that one, I want to look at this one. And I just ended up waiting for the other one to walk closer to me before I could shoot it, because it was just easier than manually shuffling around.
And I think
I feel I don't have a right to talk about combat system because I played on easy. I didn't really have much.
Yeah, but you can still talk
stuff
about controls, yeah, couldn't you? Like, yeah.
It still
thing
did the auto aim and stuff. I mean, there's stuff with bats and leeches that got a bit annoying.
The
stuff from like the camera angle issues.
The bats were the worst thing for me because they were like, that's when I really I was like, what the fuck is this system? Why did I enjoy this?
That
like,
particular bot,
that
bat
boss
battle
in the church with the bat, like that is, you know, the bat is moving not only, you know, left and right, like most of the enemies across the floor, like this bat's moving up and down as well, and it was just so hard to get a lock on it. And then
I found it was a matter of luck. Like I did that,
yeah, it was
probably about 5 or 6 times, and I never felt like I did anything different, but just the last time I just happened to beat it because it was sticking within the right, you know, where I could aim reasonably easy.
And it's so bizarre because I feel like
firing grenades at it and it died.
Yeah, well, you had that luxury because
you had more. He had more than like 4 grenades.
Because at the time, me and Steve were both, you know, like hobbling on danger status with like little to no ammo. You know, almost contemplating starting again just to get to that point with more stuff.
I actually did go back and reload an earlier save because I had one hit when I got there and no healing items, so I just had to go back and do things more efficiently and not get hit as much on the way.
And I mean, that's what I think this game would have done really well with a targeting system, and I think especially when it was released in the same year as Eternal Darkness, which featured one.
I played Eternal Darkness first, and going to even remake afterwards, I just found it really weird that I couldn't specifically target the head. I had to like wait till they got really close, and then it's like, well, it's probably going to kill you if you don't pop its head off.
I mean, it's kind of frustrating because, like, you know, I remember I played Parasite Eve back in the day, and that was, what, 1998, maybe, I'm not sure. But that game was the same setup as Resident Evil, like, it was fixed cameras, tank controls, but if you aim at someone, a targeting reticule comes up, and while you're holding the aim button, you know, you can change or move, shift areas that you will attack, like, on the enemies, which is kind of what Eternal Darkness was like. I did like the way that, you know, if you waited until the zombie was close and you kind of aimed up and shot at their head, you would have a chance of a critical attack. Like, that was like a perfect risk-reward thing. But
I never wanted to take risks.
Yeah, it was one of this is one of those games where there's just such an emphasis on survival for people who play on normal that, you know, it's going to be much easier just to either ignore them or just use your ammo and stay safe health-wise. I mentioned here, like, that kind of I would have liked if they had a targeting system, and maybe they don't want, you know, because this game, when you think about it, there's not a lot of stuff that breaks your immersion in the game, you know what I mean? You'll have some text appear on screen to simulate thought, but generally speaking, not much stuff happens. Like, there's no ammo counters, there's no health, whatever. So maybe, like, they didn't want to have, you know, a flashing targeting system like Parasite Eve, but then I thought, well, why not do something like, say, what Dead Space does, where kind of, if you're targeting something, they can maybe just highlight it with, like, a visual cue of some sort, like, say, a stench wave from a zombie, or, like, you know, even just, like, I don't know how they could do it, but
it's like retcon in, like, a sci-fi headset onto Rebecca.
Or even, like, a laser sight on your gun.
Yeah. Yeah, you know that I mean? Was like, one of the best parts about Resi 4, that it just made targeting so easy, and, yeah, that would have quite, that would have worked pretty well.
I liked the way, you know, the, like, moving on to enemies, that they kind of give you hints on how to approach enemies in the game. Like, the most obvious one is in the train, where you find a file talking about this prototype enemy, and they kind of don't imply that it's a scorpion, but you kind of work it out by putting one and one together, and you realize that its weakness is in its head, so I kind of like stuff like that. On top of that, there's kind of this unwritten rule in Resident Evil where, you know, everything to do with acid is good against hunters, and that's good for fans to know, but then there's kind of no way for players to know that who are new. Like, I don't know if you knew this, Flame, but... Well, Daniel. There's, like, flame rounds are really good against organic enemies, whereas acid rounds are really good against tyrants and hunters. And,
so, yeah, I think...
It's kind of like Pokemon type resistance, but, you know...
I'm pretty sure, because, I mean, when I was having some problems and I was looking at just weapon guides and stuff, one of the things said Molotov cocktails are really good for zombies, and I was not zombies, the
leech zombies.
Oh yeah, that makes sense, because you know it would sort of melt them and burn away. Because I was having, I mean, that's where I was getting stuck in the early part of a game. Like one of those rubbish bloody zombie leeches would show up, and I'm like, ah, died, nothing's happening, and then I'd explode. And then I read somewhere, like, oh, use Molotov. I'm like, okay, they're easy, and explained why I was seeing empty bottles. I didn't even know you could combine the empty bottles with
gasoline.
I don't think the game tells you either. I mean,
oh yeah, but they're just
because I forgot too. they're probably everywhere for you, once again, because you were playing on
it. It's probably in a note somewhere.
Yeah, but I swear I found everything. And it's a shame they didn't have, like, salt. You can just find salt shakers and just put on the leeches, because that would just make
you
it
know,
way
you guys,
easy.
Oh, like, you know, speaking of how I'm on easy mode, it's just, you know, there is health items everywhere, and I'm like, I can't leave this stuff behind, I might need it later on, and then I get later on, and there's, like, health items everywhere, and I'm like,
Moving on to, like, the actual enemies themselves, I was actually surprised, because I tried to, like, find old topics on boards and shit for this podcast, just to see what people were saying about the game, and a lot of people hated the enemies. Like, they thought that the enemies were really unimaginative, like, they just equated themselves to, you know,
like a zombie
this
monkey.
Was a snake, now it's a big snake, or this was a monkey, now it's a zombie monkey, like,
where was
it was
the big snake? What was that?
That was the first game, sorry, but you get my drift.
Centipede. Zombie centipede.
Especially this one, yeah, it's like centipede, scorpion, big spiders.
Frogs.
Yeah. Frogs, yes.
were insects really heavily featured in a lot of earlier art original games?
Not, I'm trying to remember.
Not that, like, I can remember, no, it was usually like more mammal things.
Yeah, like in the first game there were like zombies. There wasn't much at all in the first game. Like I remember there was
like zombies, dogs, snakes, spiders.
Yeah, there was an enemy introduced later on that was a spider hybrid. Like they combined human DNA with spider DNA or something.
Plants.
Yeah. And then that's what kind of what most of the enemies in Resident Evil games are. Like they kind of are obvious experiments that Umbrella have worked on that have somehow gotten loose. But this one, it was more of like I say it's an organic theme, like the enemies are all natural things that have just been exposed to this virus.
Well it just really seemed like a lot of it was like they'd been experimenting on animals and they found that the virus made them ultra aggressive and that's what the enemies are, just like, you know, either, you know, blown up because of the virus, or ultra-aggressive monkeys, or cockroach grasshoppers, or whatever.
I mean, I wrote this
have they ever sort of done biomechanical monsters in Resident Evil yet? Or have they just
not really. They're all, they kind of dip into that with Resident Evil 6, but that's where they've really gone off the deep end there. But, I mean, I like the idea of having these animals, because, like, to me, this was an accident. Like, James Marcus let that virus out. So, obviously, all the animals that are nearby are going to get infected somehow. So, I kind of think that makes sense in the context of the story.
A lot of the enemies and bosses just seemed like failed experiments, and that was really, really cool.
I mean, that's my favourite part of the Tyrant battle, because I don't know if you, especially you, Daniel, if you don't know, that Tyrant is a shitty Tyrant, like, it's really bad. It's got, like, its claw is half-developed, its heart is, like, on its
super
the outside. Yeah, super exposed. Actually, I think the original was, too. But, you know, and it obviously, it's got, its spinal cord is not properly formed, like, it looks like it's, you know, not developed properly, and that's the idea that Umbrella kind of, you know, worked on this shit and then just like literally just threw it in the bin somewhere when they couldn't get it working.
Little did they know it would come back.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff. But then I understand that, you know, in comparison to, you know, enemies like the Licker, which is like, you know, one of my favourite enemy designs in a Resident Evil game ever, that, you know, a giant frog might be a bit of a boring kind of, you know, enemy.
I kind of liked the, probably just mainly the final boss sort of pointed this out to me, but how it evolves, you know, it's a person and you see them going through that mutation process. It reminded me a lot of the boss designs that I liked out of Resident Evil 5 and 6, how they just, you know, the eyeballs popped out and came on giant tentacles and...
I mean, that's
just,
that's such
really
a Resident Evil thing, like...
Mm.
I mean, I remember Code Veronica, you'll see it if you ever play it. There's a scene where a woman is walking down the steps, and as she walks down, like, her body burns away, and she turns into this creature thing, and it just looks really cool. And that is just such a classic Resident Evil thing to happen, like, and people turning into giant monsters. And I think the designs are actually quite far ahead of you know, 5, where the enemy designs for the bosses more or less are just giant writhing tentacle masses. Like, they're not really amazing designs per se. The idea of, like, the leech zombies in this game, I really like the idea of them, but the execution to me is just terrible.
Yeah, they were just...
I think that, you know, they... I mean, this was probably more of an issue for us because we're playing on normal, but the game throws them at you way too often, especially in... There's an area in the game where you've got to, you know,
water
grab
key?
Those... No, the ones where you've got to grab the plaques, or maybe it is the water key.
Yeah.
The where you've got to grab the... like the vice handle and stuff, that area, there was like 3 in a very small area, and it's a corridor, so it's very hard to evade them. They're so unpredictable because of the way they flail around and shit. So they're hard to predict, they're hard to dodge, they take heaps of damage to destroy on normal.
Unless
I think they
like
really, really forced you to use those Molotovs, because they were reasonably easy with those, like 2 to 3, depending on how accurate you were, but if you didn't happen to have found, you know, the right items to make Molotovs or happened to carry them around with you all the time, then it was, it just took like minutes of shotgun shells and trying to dodge the writhing tentacles that could, you know, reach across most screens.
Well, I mean, the few times I died on easy was because of them. Just because, you know,
I would
didn't
say
really
that's the
know
most
what...
the times that I died was because of them.
Yeah.
Or like, I mean, when you kill them and their bottom halves just explode, like my AI partner would be standing near them and would just die because they'd cause so much damage on, like, if you were on green, fine, for your health, you would be right down to danger, like, if that happened to you. So it's a bit annoying. That's the probably the worst executed part of the game for me in terms of enemies. I like that, you know, they kind of found new ways to implement one-hit kills, even though they are kind of unfair, like with this frog swallowing you and jumping away.
Back to
destruction.
I never had that, luckily, my partner shot it.
Yeah, when I was, like, running through a bridge, like, Billy, I was playing as Rebecca, and Billy would get hit by the frog, and I thought, oh, yeah, it's just, like, the liquor, they hit him, and then I go through the door, and Billy's not with me, and I'm like, oh, shit. So I switch back to Billy, and he's, like, the frog's tongue is around Billy's leg, and he's getting dragged into the mouth of this frog, and I couldn't do anything, so I was like, no. And then, yeah, I had to start again.
I didn't mind the zombie monkey. They were funny.
Oh,
really?
I hated them so much.
They were so hard to dodge.
They just, like,
the way
jumped
they
around
jumped
on the
and
walls.
Stuff. But they're cool.
I mean, maybe just because I had no problem with them.
If you had lots of shotgun ammo, they were fine. But if you didn't have a shotgun, they were really, really difficult to hit at all. And because you couldn't dodge them either, they were just a nightmare for me.
As terms of enemies, I think they were the most efficient enemies in the game. They were the ones that almost killed everyone. Like.
Yes.
You're going onto the rail car thing, and then they scare Billy so he falls down, or the bit where they make Rebecca almost fall down the hole. I'm like, none of the other enemies almost killed him. The monkeys were the force to be reckoned with. That's what Umbrella should do, just make lots of zombie monkeys take over the world.
Well, that's what the witch from Wizard of Oz, she had the right idea.
Yes. Always comes down to the monkey. And it's a zombie monkey as well. There's nothing more funny than that.
Yeah.
Are they monkeys or are they
No, I think they're monkeys. It's really bizarre because usually you find... Oh, yeah, no, they look like baboons almost. Yeah.
Macaques.
They should do zombie sloths next.
No, they didn't have tails.
I would buy that.
Well, their umbrella term was Eliminator. I don't know why. Well, I guess I do know why, but yeah.
Anyway, we should move on from this biology lesson.
We'll move on to item and inventory management, which is probably, I would say, this is one of the major reasons why this game gets so much shit. I'll start. I think that the game itself really forces the player to carry much more items than one character can hold, and it forces the player to split the inventory between two players. I think that in itself is fine, because you're essentially getting a Resident Evil game where you can carry 16 items. But the game separates Rebecca and Billy for, you know, sometimes up to, I would say, 2 hours. And it doesn't tell you when this is about to happen. So, for example, if you guys just imagine that point where Billy is thrown off the side of the railing, whatever, imagine if you had all your weapons and all your ammo on Billy at that point in time. You don't have them to fight that tyrant later on in the game. It's got the potential.
You'd literally have to reload. You just wouldn't be able to.
It's got the potential to be like game breaking because you couldn't fight the tyrant with just a pistol and a knife as Rebecca or something.
Even if you brought your knife, I left my knife on the foyer.
Also, having 12 items is all well and good, but then each character's going to need his weapons and his ammo and
The problem is exacerbated because I'm pretty sure this is the first Resident Evil game where some guns take up two slots.
I'm pretty sure Remake did, but
I'm not 100%.
Probably, yeah.
And I mean, my favorite one is it doesn't give you really any of a hint what items you need to use again. Like that stupid grappling hook. It's like you get up to the church and it's like, okay, so I have to go all the way back to the sewers, get the grappling hook.
This is why you leave everything in the foyer.
But even then, it's like you've got no more room. Oh, this is shit.
I think that in a game like this where the inventory is limited and there's no magic boxes, which is what was in the original games, that a lot of the puzzles should have been like the chess puzzle where you don't really need items for them.
It's just based on manipulating the environment rather than finding three plaques.
You just need to go into your inventory so much to drop shit, pick up shit, combine stuff. And, you know, like people say, well, maybe if you plan better, you know, you could...
Well, you can't really plan until you're playing again.
I've got no problem with limited inventory. Some of my favourite games, I'm playing Etrian Odyssey on the 3DS or a lot of really old RPGs. You have to have a limited inventory, so you need to think of what you take. The thing with those is that they are reasonable. This is very sort of unreasonable with what you can carry, and it's like, so Rebecca can carry 250 bullets for her gun, just to show you how much I didn't need ammo in the game.
I never saw that many bullets in probably the entire game.
I could have picked bullets up. It was like, you can't carry anymore. But I mean, she can carry that many bullets, but heaven forbid she wants to carry seven herbs.
And she's got a herb kit. She should be able to carry them in her herb kit or something.
I mean, I think if the game had have given you an extra two slots per character, I would have had, like, hardly any issue with the game. But it's like, I got to the end where I had to... Because I knew I was getting up to the end, and I'm like, okay, so I should go get the grenade launcher, which I've hardly used. So I had to go all the way back to the church, get the grenade launcher and that. And then I got lost on the way back trying to get through the treatment facility.
I think stuff like, you know, the knife was the biggest thing. Like, I kind of wish I could take the knife with me, because it's good if you shoot a zombie down to the floor, you can just keep hacking at them and not waste ammo. But then that takes up a whole slot. So, like, I feel like they should have done what they did in Deadly Silence, where the knife was, like, an item you always had. And it didn't take up a spot.
Than a cigarette lighter, which you never used.
Yeah. We'll get into that later with the co-op partner stuff.
You said before, Metroid with a story, and I was sort of thinking it almost is kind of like a 3D Metroidvania. It's like, you know, your progression is limited by what items you have, so you have to get an
you
item.
You see those red doors everywhere, and then you get the fire key later on. You're like, oh yeah, where have I seen a red door before?
And I wouldn't mind that, but it's just everything is... I don't mind backtracking. I love it in my Metroidvania-style games. But the difference is those games are so fast and fluid. You don't really need to think about inventory. You don't need to sort of plan ahead. Whereas this... wants you to go back and explore, but it just makes it so tedious to go back and explore or have to go get items.
The hookshot was the
somewhere.
Biggest one.
Yeah.
Like that game
took up
kept
two slots and didn't tell you when you didn't need it anymore.
And then, you know, and it kept going. Like you kept needing it as you get through the.
I mean, but then
the counter argument to that is every Resident Evil game seems to say you won't need this anymore, discard it. And then you should know to bring it with you. But then at the same time, it never says it about this item in particular. So
even
it just feels
you've used
mean.
It never says it.
Yeah.
I think I can understand what they're doing. Because you know what? You wouldn't, you know, realistically, someone wouldn't be able to carry like a grappling hook, a rocket launcher, a shotgun, and all the ammo for it. Of course not. But at least you've got to give some...
But to be honest, I like the way that, you know, it kind of forces you to really think about your inventory. Like, I feel like that it kind of adds a little bit of strategy and realism to it. But as you guys were saying, it is very, it goes too far. And it takes it, like, it kind of is unreasonable.
I would be perfectly fine with it if they'd given each character an extra two slots and stuff to carry around. Because then there wouldn't be half as many issues as I was having. A lot of the time it was just, I need one more slot to carry something that I want.
The other thing I was just going to quickly say was, did you guys notice that there were ink ribbons next to every single typewriter?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, so I think pretty much we should have,
I still carried one around with
Yeah,
Billy
I didn't,
all
though. I just was like, I have to save thingy, so, yeah. It was,
I just always left my ink ribbons by the typewriter from now on. Gonna have to go back there. Once it became apparent that there's going to be one at every typewriter, I'll just leave them there.
Mm. And just quickly, I wanted to say, you know, this is the first Resident Evil game where, at the end of the day, you can backtrack to every single area. And I think the developers kind of knew this, and they kind of made you have to backtrack, and but at the same time, I feel like it's really lazy.
It's so slow and tedious to backtrack just because of the control system being sluggish and the loading screens. And, you know, it's all well and good being able to go back to the beginning, but when it's just such a process to do it all...
It
really did drag the game to a halt at the end when I was going back to get everything to make sure I was ready for the final battle, when I should have been, yes, let's go. And I'm like...
We'll just close off this section talking about the co-op stuff. Well, not the co-op stuff, but, you know, the partner stuff. I thought I'd just quickly open this section to say that, you know, the first Resident Evil game was meant to be co-op. They always wanted to do it, but there's even videos online somewhere where you can see them playing it together. But they took it out because it couldn't work properly, and Deadly Silence reincorporated it as a kind of separate mode later on. I don't know if you guys played it, but that was kind of cool. So, I mean... Did you guys notice most about the co-op partner in this game? Like, did they hinder you? Did they help you?
I mean, more I was worried about, because I had Billy with the shotgun and Rebecca with the pistol, and I was mainly using Rebecca, so I was just worried about Billy wasting shotgun ammo.
Yeah, that's what really annoyed me about stuff, is, like, I kind of had to babysit them. Like, I'd have to take the shotgun off Rebecca if she had it, because she would try and use it to kill a leech or a bat.
You can have a knife.
Yeah, it's like...
Don't stab yourself in the face,
like,
and we're good.
I was saying to Steven, I was like, okay, Rebecca, you can have 15 bullets, and if you're good, you can have some more. But for now, you're only getting 15. Because she was just... Like, because I played as Billy the most, because Billy has the most health, so he can get hit more. And
it seemed like his weapons did more damage, too, for some reason.
His
pistols
did.
He took a lot less recoil as well.
But it's got
just
to...
Just on the pistol, was there any difference between their pistols?
Billy's one did more damage, and he has a greater chance of getting a critical hit where their heads
explode.
Okay.
I just used Rebecca's pistol, I didn't notice.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, Rebecca ended up being the one with the pistol and Billy.
Yeah. I mean, it got to the point where I just confiscated everything from Rebecca and just let her be my personal portable item box, because, you know, she just wasn't that good. But I did notice when I gave her back the pistol, when I had a lot of ammo and stuff, she would be really helpful. If I got grabbed by a zombie, she would actually... do a good job at saving me, I guess.
I think that was part of the reason why they didn't have the defense items, apart from them just not really, you know, development hell. But I think just having a partner there to be able to shoot things off of you kind of made the defense items, at least when you had the other character with you, a little bit redundant.
The only thing that is annoying about the AI is, like, if I'm trying to just, you know, backtrack somewhere and I'm running through a corridor of spiders, for example... Rebecca would stop and shoot the spiders even though I just want to get through that corridor, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then she might get bitten, she might get poisoned, which is even more annoying. And then that's just...
Hang on, was poisoning in the games before this?
Yes. Yeah. Poisoning was, like, in all the games, yeah. They took it out from 4 onwards, I think.
Because this was only when, like, the spiders were around and it was just annoying.
Yeah. They introduced more enemies that could poison you later on, not just spiders, but, yeah, they were annoying as. That was really frustrating. I did like how you could kind of control them with the C-stick, if you're playing...
I didn't notice that until, like, 10 hours into the game.
Really?
Really?
Like, I mean...
What? You could...
I mean, I don't know how you did it on the Wii remote, but if you used the C-stick, you could control the second player, which was kind of good if you wanted them to move out of the way somewhere, because you know how AI sometimes just gets in the place you want to go. I mean, but it was kind of useless.
It was hard enough controlling one character with those tank controls, and being able to control two characters at once, as well as them being in a not-analog controlled, I just couldn't be bothered controlling both at once.
It would have been nice if, and I mean, they could have done this maybe even for, like, the Wii version, like, if you could maybe give another control to a second player and maybe just play together, because that would work okay-ish. But, yeah, I mean, there's also... problem with it if that did happen, but yeah, I don't know. I think
with the camera angle as well.
Yeah, but then it could just be like the game itself now, where if you run off, Rebecca has to catch up, otherwise she'll make a noise and you have to come back. You know, but I
do think that the co-op partners they did hinder things a bit, especially during bosses where you'd be running away from the boss and the co-op character would take, you know, 2 or 3 seconds to catch up and run away as well. But at the same time, they were a second gun shooting at the thing that you wanted to shoot, and it just meant that they were taken down a lot quicker.
Just because of how abundant ammo was. I mean, like Rebecca would have the pistol, Billy with the shotgun. He'd shoot stuff with the shotgun, and then Rebecca would do one or two shots with the pistol to knock stuff down to finish it off.
I wish we had that luxury when we were playing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I suck at video games. I had to play on easy.
The only thing that that I just want to talk about now with the co-op stuff, all the partner stuff, was they kind of tried to make it so that they both were unique, and that kind of harkens back to the days of Sweet Home, which is what these games were based off of, where, you know, that there was that woman who has the vacuum cleaner, so she can vacuum glass and walk through the corridor.
Jill is the master of unlocking.
And Jill can play piano, but in this game, Billy can play piano and Rebecca can't.
Which she makes has a no secret musical
but
past.
But then that makes no sense, because Rebecca has to play the piano for Chris in the first game, so...
Maybe she learned from Billy after the events here as she was walking to the mansion.
More continuity errors. Rebecca, so in this game, Rebecca's ability, she can mix herbs, and which it makes, to me, I thought that was fine. Like, you know, she can make them potent as healing items because she's a medic. Like, that's her job. She's trained. Mm. And I assume in the Resident Evil universe, you have to be trained to do something like that. But then Billy, his unique ability is a lighter. And, like,
got it from prison.
I mean, maybe he should be... maybe he should be the one who can pick locks. I don't know, that would be a perfect way to...
I'm surprised he had, the handcuff on and they never sort of tried to use that as a tool in the game. I don't know. You know how, you see using it...
I kind of get what you mean. Like, he could
I wish I could handcuff Rebecca to Billy so she didn't take so long to catch up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know how, the sort of hang glide down...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just was very... Or, you know, he was in the army. Surely he'd have some sort of...
Like a hookshot?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, his skill was just pointless. And as
but
we said...
a lighter that you use for a puzzle that is so obtuse and just weird and bizarre and batshit crazy.
And that's a good way to... We'll close off game design there. We'll go to a quick break and we'll return with presentation. And we're back, so we will quickly get into presentation. Visuals, first of all. Game looks amazing.
Good.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how much it stood up, to be honest. But I do think Remake still looks better. I think a lot more effort and polish went into that game. But this is also quite good.
There are just so many little details you see, like the lights on a window or water flowing. Just, it looked so perfect.
It was interesting. It's worth noting, actually. This is the first... I didn't realise this, but apparently a lot of the animated backgrounds weren't in the original Resident Evil game. Like, the Resident Evil remake. Like, the animated background was kind of Resident Evil Zero's thing. Like, they...
Oh, okay. I do remember that Zero, one of its things was that it had, it'll have your static area, but it can, scroll left and right or up and down, rather than having to go to a different screen, which was kind of nice in some sections.
And that was a big deal, because, I remember the first time that happened in a Resident Evil game was Code Veronica, but that was because the environments were 3D.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the backgrounds, even in the train, seeing the light of the train as it passes trees or whatever, change on each of the seats, seeing a
and then
body
have
hanging
that,
over the seat.
What about
and have the shadow reflected on your character and your character's shadow on everything else, just all play. That was so nice.
What about having your reflection in windows?
Reflection.
Me out a few times. Was that a zombie?
Yeah, I know what you mean. There were some areas where it's just, reflected in... You have, a huge glass window, and it's like, that's me.
I mean, I think on a technical level, it doesn't look as good as some games today. But I think, obviously it can't, because it's an old game. But, on an artistic level, it's ridiculous. It's miles ahead of so many games.
Yeah, because they had, because they were static-ish areas, they could put so much effort into each of those frames, whereas if they didn't have to, 3D model every single... item in the area, so they could just put a lot more effort into these 2D images with some movement.
And I mean, that's something you've got with the whole static camera, or fixed. What's the proper term for it?
fixed camera.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at, like, especially with the PS1 era Final Fantasy games or Bravely Default, when you're dealing with a static environment, you can do so much gorgeous detail with it. Whereas if you have to 3D model everything, you lose a lot of that, but you get a lot more interactivity.
It's so expensive to do now, like HD era. Like, it would cost.
Well, you look
so
at like Infamous 2, where everything is all sort of. Second Son. Everything's all really well designed, and all the environment moves around, and that must cost millions and millions of hundreds of millions of dollars to make.
If it sold like the 1.2 million that this sold, it would be a commercial flop, and they would never make another Resident Evil.
It's like, what's the recent Tomb Raider? They said, well, that performed under what we needed it to be considered a smash hit. And it sold really well from what I can gather, but it's not enough to recoup the losses, which is sort of the weird place that the industry is in at the moment, where we've got these really high-end AAA games and then lots of really low-end indie stuff.
But back to Resident Evil Zero.
Sorry.
On the train, like, you know, when you walk past a drink cart, you see there's a wine bottle, like, teetering over the top of the, you know, the drink cart and stuff. Stuff like that. It's just,
or like, flowing cloth on the curtains and things like that.
Yeah, and it gets worse when a scorpion, like, jumps in and, you know, the wind gets harder and stuff. It just looks...
Yeah.
Even that scene where they're walking across the top of the train and there's that really heavy rain and the characters have obviously changed, like, you know, poses to kind of, you know, combat the rain, I guess. Like, it just looks so real, and it really pulls you in.
And I think they definitely did this in Remake. I don't remember noticing it in Zero, but that's probably just because it had become so normal to me. But I remember in Remake specifically, your footsteps would be dust coming up around where you step. And
yeah, it does that in Zero, yeah.
It's everything just
like if you're stepping
works
on
so
a,
perfectly together.
If you're just stepping on, like, a carpet, usually it happens.
And the sound of your footsteps will change as well.
Yeah, the biggest thing that stood out to me with this game in particular, like not Remake, is that they kind of put a lot of effort into making the leeches slimy and wet.
Yes.
You know, the way that they glisten and stuff as light shines on them and stuff like that. I really think that was really done well too. But it just in general, it looks so much better. And I'm really glad they kind of moved it to GameCube because it looks better. But then maybe
definitely.
It would have been
a
better game if they had... maybe taking their time, I don't know.
I think the best part about it, the biggest difference between the GameCube Resident Evils and the like PlayStation ones is they literally doubled the resolution. Like, the PS1 ones were like 320 by 240 pixels, which is just like postage stamp size these days. And these were double the, you know, 640 by 480, and you could just really see it. There was so much more room for detail. It was incredible.
Yes.
It is really one of the better looking GameCube games. I mean, heck, even compared to a lot of Wii games, it's, you know, people said, say, like, the Wii couldn't do graphic stuff. Heck, if every game on the Wii had have been this sort of level, I don't think many people would have been complaining.
But I mean, I think it really shows, like, a perfect way to show what the difference is between a pre-rendered game and a 3D game is just to play Resident Evil Zero and then play Resident Evil Zero in Umbrella Chronicles. You know, you can kind of see that there's a lot of downgrading has had to be done to get everything to fit onto these environments after. And I really wish that, I mean, I don't think you'll want to anytime soon, Daniel, but if you play Remake, you'll see, like, how much, like, how everything you see in Zero was really polished and much better honed for Remake. The later areas, especially, like, the Shark Tank and stuff, they are some of, like, the most memorable areas, like, in a video game ever to me. And I really get excited because, you know, if anyone's looking forward to Evil Within, it's the same environment designer, so hopefully that kind of carries over.
Oh, wow. I just have such vivid memories of going into that outer residence area. Oh.
Yeah, like the Lisa Trevor house in the graveyard and stuff. That stuff is just eerie and really creepy, but really well done. And it was even better for people who didn't play the original because it was all new. You were like, what is this? Like, no one knew what it was. I think in terms of audio with Resident Evil Zero, it's interesting to note that there's not a lot of music in this game. I thought there would be, but there isn't. You know, the entirety of most of the train section is just the sound of the train riding across the rails, which is kind of creates this weird kind of dichotomy between, you know, you're in a tense and in, like, situation, but it's a relaxing kind of sound.
I mean,
do you know
what
I
mean?
Yeah, it kind of keeps a beat going without it being an actual piece of music.
And you sort of look at how horror, not just with video games, but in, like, any genre, music and sound is always used as a way to sort of notify you. It's like when Jaws, like with Jaws, when that music sort of starts playing, you know something's about to happen. And they do a bit of that in Zero. It's like you'll go into a room and there'll be music playing, and it's sort of a cue to think, okay, I've got to sort of tense up now because something's about to happen. And they do that a lot.
But then to the opposite effect, like, how did you feel when you walk in and you hear that save room theme? Like, it's just, I mean, you probably didn't feel it as much on easy mode, but if you're playing,
you feel safe for, like, once in the entire game. Yeah. It's like, this room, nothing will come in here.
It's just so, yeah, it is just so relaxing. It's one of the best.
Something I've noticed for the sound, not it's not music-based, but it's just with your footsteps. It's what, like, you when you move from walking on, like, tiled floor,
like hard floor to carpet,
it changes, or you're walking over glass or stuff, and it's just, I mean, it, you know, it's just a little detail that I don't know if a lot of games were doing that at that point, but it's just...
I know that Silent Hill 2 and... Oh, no, I don't even think Silent... Oh, no, Silent Hill was. Resident Evil probably did too. But they were, like, really small attention to details. And they fit in this area, because it is audio. But, yeah, that's one thing I really loved. I think, Stephen, you said that, you know, it's kind of weird, because they all sound like they're wearing high heels, but then...
Yeah.
I don't know, like, if I walk down...
Maybe they were hard-bottom shoes.
If I put on shoes and go walk down my house, I make noise, like... I don't know if I make noise that same way they do, but I don't know, like... I agree, like, I love the way that, you know, it changes as they move. It just, and even if you walk from one area of the same room to a wet area of that room, the squelch noise, you know, happens instead of the normal footstep.
I would just really love if at the end, like, an extra bonus Easter egg was that they were wearing tap shoes the whole time and they do a tap routine.
I don't know if that would go down. Maybe for the 64 version,
I would love
but
that.
Not for the, not Fan for
uproar.
The GameCube version. But speaking of the 64 version, we'll move into the last segment, which is the beta elements of the game. So anyone who doesn't know already, the game started life... You probably should know because you've been listening to this episode, but it started life as a Nintendo 64 game. As I said, most of the models and stuff of enemies were ripped directly from old games. I don't know if anyone who's listening has seen the pre-release footage, but the train was actually very well lit. Like, it was very bright. It was not like the dark, kind of ominous feeling train that was we found in the final version. I personally think that would take away from the atmosphere, and I completely understand why they changed it. I don't know how you guys feel, but...
I think it might have been another part of the resolution we touched on before, just because you don't have as much room for detail, you wouldn't be able to... I kind of oriented myself with the lights that sort of highlighted items and things in the area, whereas... If you don't actually physically have the pixels to show that, it's really hard to navigate around a dark area when you can't see those little nuanced pieces of, you know, direction.
Did anyone really... I mean, James, you probably were a mega Resident Evil fan back in the day. But I mean, I was sort of... Never having a PlayStation, I was sort of... What's the word? I was aware of Resident Evil, I guess, because my brother had a PlayStation. I'd never played him, and I remember seeing, like, screenshots of Gamer about this game. And Resident Evil for the Game Boy,
which is out there now and playable.
Have you played it?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I understand why they scrapped it. But it's very,
amazing
it's
that they did
good
it.
Effort. It's fantastic effort for a Game Boy Color game for sure. It's pretty much a PlayStation 1 game as a Game Boy Color game.
Is it complete?
But
yeah, I mean, I remember hearing about an N64 game, and I was kind of interested in both of them because, you know, the N64 gamer guys were hyping it up a fair bit, as they were very good at doing. So, I mean, yeah, I remember being interested in it, but then it just sort of quietly disappeared. And, oh, yeah, it's my game.
In the original game, Rebecca kind of had an outfit similar to Jill's. You know, she was wearing a white medic outfit with a white beret and white shoulder pads. I put in brackets here, 90s alert, because it was
yeah.
very 90s.
Yeah,
if you actually
how many
did
couches
some digging.
Does she have on her? She have many couches.
I think Cargo she had pants. Two. Two pouches
and
cargo
all?
Pants.
That's not 90s.
Rolled up cuff.
Would be disgusted.
In addition to that, there was a cutscene on the disc of the GameCube version that kind of highlighted that Rebecca might have had the old costume, but I'm really glad Capcom scrapped it. Billy looked much more boyish and looked like he was wearing fake tan, so he pretty much looked like a member of Jersey Shore.
He does, actually.
Each character could carry up to 8 items, according to early screenshots, which is really what Flame... Daniel would have wanted better.
Does the tattoo say something on his arm in those screenshots?
It says, in both games it says Mother, but they made it less obvious in Resident Evil Zero.
I never noticed.
One thing that I'm noticing...
version, it looks like he is a child wrote on his arm.
On one thing I'm noticing on the inventory is the shotgun only takes up one slot, as well as there being more slots overall. So they were really, really far more lenient with the inventory back then.
Yeah.
I want the N64 version.
Everyone would like to play it, I'm sure.
The story details also changed. Stars began searching for Billy to ask him what he was doing near a damaged police van, whereas in the GameCube version, they search for him because they assume he killed the people and escaped. Mm. So I guess that makes it, like, you know, kind of Rebecca would be more inclined to work with him. It makes, you know, because she doesn't think he's a murderer. And the Stars team didn't know that Billy was a convict until Rebecca sees the handcuffs on his arm when they first meet in the train, whereas in the GameCube version, obviously, they read the papers and they see that he was being transferred. Mm. As we said previously, when Edward jumps through the window in the 64 version, he's missing his right hand. This links to the introduction of Resident Evil 1, where Joseph finds the hand with the gun in its hand, in its grasp, whereas in Remake, that was changed, so the final version is changed as well in the GameCube version. On top of that, the game design and the critical path of the game was allegedly nailed down early in development and did not change at all throughout the entirety. So the reason why Resident Evil Zero probably reuses so many areas and stuff is probably a leftover from the 64 game, which literally has not changed that much at all.
Hmm. And I guess, yeah, I think you've got it mentioned here in the notes, but because the N64 cartridge was so small, they literally could not have
too
enough.
Many different areas.
That's it. Every one of those the areas with a screen image would have taken up a fairly significant chunk on an N64 console, whereas, like, comparatively, a 3D world takes up much less because it's just a series of instructions of where the, you know, where all the technical vertices and stuff is. But an image is an image, and they can only compress it so much.
I mean, I imagine if the 64DD had have been a proper thing.
That was sort of more about, you know, more storage space in addition.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting if this had have come out on the N64 back when it was meant to. I would have been interested to see how it would have gone.
Basically what's happened is, I mean, you know, with the Game Boy one, I don't know if you guys are aware, but the Game Boy Color one, there's actually a lot of people own these prototypes, right? And they, most of them are not protected by NDA, so they can, if they really wanted to, they could sell it, but because they're so rare, they know they can sell it for heaps. I know that, for example, Resident Evil 1.5, which was the prototype of Resident Evil 2, which is like the holy grail of prototypes for Resident Evil games, that was sold out by someone, and it was a lot of money. We're talking, I'm pretty sure, tens of thousands of dollars, maybe even hundreds, and a team now owns that, and they're working to restore it. Same Game Boy Color, I know that the person who sold that, like, they did a Kickstarter fundraiser kind of thing. And, yeah, once that happened, it leaked, and it's out there. With Resident Evil Zero, it's a little bit different, because no one ever actually sent copies of that game to magazines. Like, the only way people ever played this game was at Tokyo Game Show and a Capcom press event. So there were only, apparently, 3 cartridges in existence. And they're only of the train section. I'm pretty sure, like, off the top of my head, there is one guy who has it and has made it public that he has it. But when he was going to sell it, Capcom apparently quickly and swiftly
swooped in
and said, "You're not doing that. We will sue you."
Capcom is a giant bat.
Yeah. So there's a chance. I mean, I would never have thought in my life that we would ever get to play 1.5, which is, you know, Resident Evil 2 before it became Resident Evil 2. But it looks like it's going to happen this year.
Well, you know, it's like these turn up all the time. It's like Star Fox 2 when that came out.
There's a thing with Capcom stuff, though, is it's very well sought after. So a lot of money
is Nintendo
required.
Stuff.
Is it? Like, I
think
hear
a lot of the time
much,
when
then
people have these highly sought after prototypes, they'll go realize how much money people are going to pay to get this out into the public domain, and they'll ask for money. Whereas if this guy didn't make it public that he had it and didn't go asking for money, like, if he wanted to be a good Samaritan, could have sort of uploaded the ROM onto a website anonymously, and then we'd all be able to have a joyous time with it. But yeah, Capcom,
I mean,
now know
Steven,
who he is, and if it gets leaked, they'll be able to take him down.
So yeah, that's enough for the beta stuff. We will quickly go to a short break, and then we'll wrap up the episode. And we're back. So, as you guys are probably all aware, we were holding a competition to decide who would win, a $15 eShop card from us. We will announce the winner now. The winner was...
Drumroll.
June Park. And as always, thank you to everyone who entered. On the Wednesday, the 7th of May, will be our next official episode. We'll be looking at Kirby Triple Deluxe and NES Remix 2. Obviously, if any release date change or there's a huge announcement or something, we might change things, but for now, that's what it will be. And on Wednesday, the 21st of May, we will have our next proper in-depth critique episode, just like this one. As always, you're all welcome to request any games that you want us to look at. We won't do it straight away, because we have got these planned in advance, but we will add them to the queue, I guess, if we are able to find them and play them properly. So as always, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes, because we will, we really, really appreciate the criticism and stuff, so... we can get better.
And if you like us, it helps people find us as well.
That's true too. So even if you don't want to help us, even if you don't have criticism, leave a review so people can find us. Obviously, there's an article that goes up with this that just tells you about the episode itself, and obviously you can comment on that too if you want to give us feedback. So for now, we hope you've enjoyed this very long and lengthy episode, and we will see you next fortnight.
See ya.
Bye.